Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, and joined by the host with the most, the Hall of Famer, the difference maker, Mr. Tony Sager. Tony, how are you, sir?
Hey, Sean. Always great to be back on the air with you.
Great to be back with you. We're also joined by Senior Director of Information Security, Stephanie Gass. Hey, Stephanie.
Hey, Sean. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Thank you. And last but not least, our Chief Information Officer, Mr. Angelo Marcotullio. Angelo, how are you, sir?
Hello, everybody. Great to be back on the podcast.
Fantastic. So what we're reviewing today is really the practical application of CIS at CIS. We like to say, and it's not you eat your own dog food. No, no. This is you drink your own champagne. And I got that from the host with the most. Tony, where did that come from?
Well, that phrase, we used it when I was in government, eat your own dog food. And I was chatting with a vendor friend. He said, yeah, one of our competitors started using that, as proof that that they use their own products. I said, but at the end of the day, dog food is still dog food. Our stuff is really good. So they started a counter campaign of we drink our own champagne. And I couldn't let that one go. It was just so accurate. So,
absolutely.
So that's us. Our stuff is good. And it's tasty.
Yes,
and we celebrate.
Yes, it is. It's a celebration. Absolutely. So Angelo, being at CIS for a number of years, we've obviously been nearly working together for 8 years, which is, that's gone by so quickly.
It has.
When we think about the practical use of our products, CIS controls, benchmarks, things of that nature, really what comes to mind is if you've seen that maturation over these last few years.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think it might not be obvious to people outside of CIS, but we do actually use all of the products and services that we offer our members and our customers at CIS. And they're part of a comprehensive security, cybersecurity defense system we have to, starting at the CIS controls, practices, best practices to strengthen an organization's cybersecurity posture. And not only are they, I view the CIS controls in three ways. One is they help to significantly decrease the likelihood that you will be successfully attacked by a cybersecurity actor. If you are much more likely to prevent significant damage that cyber attacker could execute on your environment. And thirdly, again, following the best practices as outlined by the CIS critical security controls, your ability to become aware of through monitoring and alerting of somebody doing something that is unusual, abnormal, and having those systems in place, are a significant benefit to our infrastructure and the products and services we offer to our members.
Oh, 100%. And Tony, this is something that, we've talked about for a long time, is telling the CIS story of the CIS products and services, right? That's important to you. And I just wanted to, get your thoughts on why it's so important that we not only practice what we preach, but we also, talk about it, socialize that.
No, absolutely. And I think, the world that Angelo describes was not true when I came on board. So it's taken, hard work by particularly the three people that are guests here to really bring that to reality. As an example, I'm part of the comic book origin story of the controls, right? And the original list that started it for us back at the National Security Agency was an outgrowth of red team, blue team testing. And I was watching what was happening, all those security teams at NSA worked for me at that point in time, and realizing, boy, we're spending a lot of money to just find the same problems over and over again. Maybe we should do something about it. And there was no history before that of pulling together lessons learned. Every red team job was treated as a separate thing with highly classified outputs and so forth. And the idea of look, let's take a look at this. Now we've seen failure at scale. How do we translate it into positive action? And I often talk about our work at CIS, right? It's translation. How do I take this all this complicated technology, business use of technology, attacker tradecraft, and not just tell everybody, but translate it into positive, constructive things that they can do. So I'll reveal a secret here, not one that will get us in trouble, but you can't imagine that we're doing all this great work, codifying these lessons, putting together guidance at NSA. Which enterprise was the least likely to ever use NSA-created security guidance? Well, it was NSA, the enterprise, because, I mean, there were a lot of complications. It was a gigantic worldwide thing with, you know, many authorities and classification levels, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, there's a, what is it? The cobbler's kids are all barefoot or whatever that old saying is, right? So it's easy to pontificate and tell people what to do. It's a lot harder to do it. And that's something that we really strive for at CIS, right? We're not carving out guidance on stone tablets and handing it down from afar. We're trying to help people achieve the good intentions that are embodied in the controls and the benchmarks, right? And so, you know, practices, policies, you know, one of the things I think I'm really proudest of is that we've tried to take the ideas, you know, that from, you could say, well, the controls are just a list, right? There's a gazillion lists out there. Yeah, there are. But if you look at the ecosystem of things we've built around the controls, so training and templates and tools and measurements and all that, you know, the goal is to help people achieve. And that's what I found very frustrating in my government days, that we've been able to address better here as the Center for Internet Security, which is we can freely sort of create, you know, the things that will help people achieve the good intentions there and make them available at no cost, or work them through vendors to provide, you know, commercial alternatives or well-supported alternatives to, you know, to what we just give away here. So that's what really, I think, separates us from a lot of the, I'll call it, professional advice givers. And the other thing I'll mention, I often talk about Angelo and Stephanie's work and your work, Sean. You know, again, we are a security company that has all the same problems of every other, right, outward-facing IT company in the industry. So we have to do a good job. Our board will demand nothing less. Our reputation depends upon it. And so we're very conscious of this entire sort of ecosystem and I'll call it, you know, a virtuous cycle that says we learn from our ISAC mission, our operational mission. We learn from our own operations. We help translate all of that and all the stuff we do with threat intelligence companies and so forth into action.
Yeah. And just to follow up on that, you know, one of the things that I'm sure we've all been in this situation where you're in a personal environment, you know, the kid's softball game or something like that, and you meet somebody and they say, oh, what do you do? And you say, well, I work for a cybersecurity company. And they immediately go, oh, what should I do to protect my business? And prior to the CIS critical security controls and implementation group one, you know, my answer was more of an ad hoc answer, you know, patch, secure passwords, multi-factor. But it was, again, it was ad hoc. Now I have a great answer, and I have a very specific answer, and that is check out the CIS critical security controls. Start with implementation group one. They're written at a, you know, mostly non-technical level. Even if you have a sort of an entry-level IT organization, they can follow it, or your managed security provider can follow it. And having that specific answer, I think, is just something that had not existed beforehand.
Agreed. It's an easier answer now. Definitely.
Exactly.
Completely agree, Angelo.
And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break.
Think your cybersecurity is reasonable? A fancy lock on the server room door just won't cut it.
No, it won't, Sean. Fortunately, CIS Secure Suite comes with tools and resources for building a truly reasonable cyber defense program.
And you can test it too. Membership helps you evaluate how solid your defenses are using risk quantification.
That's key for complying with U.S. state data privacy laws and proven you've taken the right steps if a breach occurs.
Now through November 19th, save on a new membership with a multi-year discount.
Want to make your cyber defense program reasonable?
Start secure and stay secure with CIS Secure Suite.
Learn more by visiting cisecurity.org/cis-secure-suite.
Thank you.
And let's jump back into the episode. So, Will, myself and Stephanie have worked together for many, many years. And the relationship we have is this. I say, you do all the work and I'll take the credit. So speaking of that, so Stephanie, as you know, as we've built and you've generated and created not only GRC, but information security more generally at CIS, we've worked with a number of different frameworks, a number of different certifications and attestations. How important are those that you see in our environment? One, as a level of trust, but how important has it been to align those to the CIS controls?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, working with SOC 2, Type 2, and ISO 27001 and 27701, they're very high level requirements, right? Your organization needs to have administrative controls, but what do those administrative controls look like? So it's really trying to understand what your organization needs and how your organization can fulfill those controls. And one way to do that is using the CIS controls, because it really breaks it down on how do you do it. While not necessarily at the super technical level, we do have benchmarking available as well. But it allows us the ability to kind of look at those controls and say, okay, within access controls, what does that really look like? You know, leveraging the CIS controls, because it kind of breaks it down a little bit further than the frameworks do. It helps create those audit controls that you need, and it creates that foundation, right, for implementing overall security throughout your organization.
Oh, 100%. You know, one of the things we've been working on, just as another, you know, interest element for the organization and what we do, is we've been building elements of automation. So we've got a SIM product that we've been using to align automation. And we've really started to think about this element of GRC engineering and really looking at the governance, risk, and control or compliance areas, whichever C you want to use at the end of the GRC acronym. That's choice at this point. But we've done it in such a way that one is repeatable. It gives us an opportunity, one, to engage, enact. We build playbooks in order to actualize those with who we would call audit owners, and really started to bring some fresh ideas to the table. And as we've looked at, you know, the implementation groups, and, you know, Tony, I've been a fan and have been implementing the CIS control since version 5. So I've just been doing the whole list, right? And then we broke it down in version 8, thank you, and allowed us, you know, an approach that was threat-based. These are the most important controls. These are how to prioritize. And that's really helped us strive. And we've done a number of great things, you know, with Angelo's team, with Stephanie leading in that space, with SOC 2, Type 2 compliance, ISO 27001, 27701 for privacy, FISMA attestation and alignment, CGIS review and alignment. So, I mean, the acronym SLOOP. And so, Tony, I have to, we're going to have to mention it, and I owe you the $5 again, but this fog of more, right, that we have, so I owe you again, has led us, though, that our underpinning requirement is the CIS controls. That's what we go to first. If there's any differentiation, that's fine. But it's always been the solid foundation and the bedrock on which we've built the program. And that, I think, speaks volumes that we're not a large company, you know, nonprofit, but we can achieve these things because I believe we started the right way. And so, Angelo, you know, we've been through this journey together. Any thoughts that you've seen from the outcomes of our ability to manage not only security, but compliance?
I sleep better at night. That's the first one and most important one. But what I see is the evolution and the path. So at the very beginning, and you know, sometimes my staff comes to me and they say, why are we doing this, right? Is this really necessary? And at the very beginning, maybe it's not obvious that it is something we should do or that there is value. But as you mature and as you build upon it, and that's really, Sean, I think the key in what you were sort of referencing before is, you know, as much as we want that product, that service that we can just buy and implement and everything is fine, it doesn't exist. It probably is never going to exist. It is building on a solid foundation. And, you know, sometimes it's maybe even, I don't know, a couple of weeks, couple of months, and you start to see the value. And sometimes it could be literally a couple of years. But you do see that, and you do have to be persistent and, you know, be, you know, communicate the same message over and over again, that there is value here, that this is the right process for the organization. And it is like many other things we have to do. We have to prioritize it. We have to compare it to other activities. You know, we do have a business to run. And as much as we'd all like to just focus on IT and security, you know, the business people might have a different perspective on that. And sometimes, you know, rightfully so, they may push back and say, okay, you know, let's reevaluate the risk. Let's look at, you know, are there other compensating controls or activities we can put in place for the time being so that we can prioritize or focus on something else, and we'll come back to that. And that's all part of, I think, a healthy environment, a healthy culture.
Absolutely agree. And Tony, it leads me to this point is it's the evangelization of these controls and why they're here. And like, you know, Angelo mentioned, you may not see the value today, but that protection tomorrow is, I'm glad we put the time and the effort in to do these actions and requirements. And so I look to your guidance as the evangelist to say, oh, I'm going to steal some of Tony's words and I'm going to replay them back to the organization. So Tony, you're teaching all of us to be better.
You know, going back to kind of the origins of the idea, right? Again, I had this amazing job, you know, late in my government career, getting to see failure at really large scale. You know, all the NSA red teams, blue teams, what the services were seeing, what the bad guys were doing to us, and what we were doing to bad guys. And, you know, it's just a great education. But this realizing that just telling people how they're flawed doesn't solve the problem, right? The red team result, the penetration test, the list of vulnerabilities and CVEs, that's not enough. And it was this, I'll pay myself a buck on this one, Sean, the fog of war thing, right? Yet the frustration was there were solutions. You know, I used to live with nation state attackers, and they're really good at what they do, but they don't do magic. And they have a budget, they have a boss, they have a life cycle, they have their own risk model. And so what you want is to intelligently make choices that raises exposure, cost, et cetera, for the bad guys. And so you want to control the things that you can. And so what kind of drove the thinking, I used to use this term, we don't use it at CIS, the 80-20 of security. You know, the 80%, 20% of you ever heard the Pareto principle, right? How do I get most of my value, the 80%, with the least amount of resources, so that I can focus my attention on maybe that upper 20%, the highly critical, the unique to me, et cetera, et cetera. And I realized at some point that 80% is basically the same for everybody in the marketplace. You're on the internet using basically the same technology. It doesn't matter if nobody cares about you, right? You might be the jump point, the bystander, the victim. Any one of them could be true on any given day. So we need to get everyone to some level that's foundational. And Angelo, I think you really hit it well, which is that doesn't solve all problems. That allows you now the luxury of being able to focus on like some of the things that Stephanie does, right? What is really important to this enterprise? If I'm drowning in noise and hygiene issues and, you know, basic housekeeping, I can never get to that point. So I need a foundation. That was the origin of IG1, by the way, that Angelo mentioned, right? Even, and by the way, think of our work as a distillation of the thousands of recommendations out of the NIST catalog and all these, right? But even that turned out to be a barrier to some folks. And so we consciously, and really driven by Kurt and Phyllis in the CIS team, to create an easier on-ramp. How do I get people started? The goal is not pass-fail test. The goal is to help people improve. So I got to get them started with something. That foundation, though, and if, you know, as an insider on the discussions, the amount of time we spend thinking about how do we build up from a core, you know, build a foundation that applies no matter what, no matter how sophisticated the adversary, no matter how nuanced the threat information you get, do I have the machinery to execute it, to do something with it, to take advantage of that information? So you want to build carefully this foundation of defense. And a lot of this, say one other word that several, that I think you've all said at one point, you're not solving a one-time problem, you're building a program, right? You're building a machine that has to execute over and over and over again. So Stephanie, I'll turn it over to you. A lot of your work is about defining the machine, right? What does it look like? What inputs does it take? What can result from it? So that's really your world, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say that is part of it. I think the controls actually helped establish, as everybody's mentioned, the foundation, right? Because as we expand as an organization, as we bring in more products and services, as we offer more products and services, being able to have that baseline of the controls as your foundation is really critical, and they need to be repeatable. So as our organization evolves, these controls might evolve how we handle them, but at the same time, it still stays the same underlying controls. So that is where I feel that it was really helpful, is it allows us to expand onto the new products and services without recreating the wheel. It's already there. It's just modifying an existing control or rewording it to better capture the current day risks.
You know, Stephanie, that is an incredibly important point, because I often talk about it this way. I think we're one of the few, you know, framework owners, recommendation givers, et cetera, that consciously recognizes we're not the only place in town that does this stuff. There's lots of others. You mentioned a bunch of them, right? ISO and PCI and all those. And so this, you know, alphabet soup, this fog of more, we see it. And again, our goal is to help people achieve. And we operate at more of a prescriptive, you know, we try to be a vendor agnostic, but technology focused level of defense. But as near as I can tell, we're the only folks that sort of recognize this as a problem, right? Every enterprise has to reports to not just one framework, but multiple frameworks, and if you're at all in any kind of complicated business. And we provide mappings, tools to help you navigate that. So our work has always, I think, appealed to technologists, to, you know, people who have to build a roadmap and an improvement program. But the boss wants to know how we're doing against NIST CSF, or the CFO wants to know how we're doing with PCI, or, you know, process people want to. And so we provide mappings to make that simpler for folks. And whenever we can get the other end to cooperate, the kind of shiny example is our work with the Cloud Security Alliance, that we build the mapping between us right together from the front. No one else has to do it on their own. No auditor gets to make it up. Right, it's just part of the product that we produce here. But this idea of we are inside a much bigger ecosystem, and if we just do a little more work on the front end, folks like us, we actually streamline that kind of activity that you talked about, Stephanie.
Oh, 100%. So important to streamline in that area as well. Because Angelo, you know, the way I'll phrase it this way is, we've just made it sound very, very easy. This takes a lot of challenges to overcome. Negotiation, what can we do today versus what we can do tomorrow? And so, you know, Angelo, any framing in that space?
Yeah, you know, you really have to trust your staff to come to you with those, you know, those issues, those questions, when they're uncertain. Generally speaking, the answer is not going to magically appear to them, and making sure that you are open to questioning priorities, questioning the maybe the depth that you need to go into a particular problem initially, and having that communication, right? You know, my focus is always, I'm not so concerned about the pace that we're moving forward. I'm concerned that we continue to move forward, right? And that we don't get stuck, and then as time goes on, it falls off the radar, and you never make any progress beyond that. So from my perspective, you know, letting the team know that, you know, not only my team, but your team, Sean, as you know, we work hand in hand together all the time, that this is a collaboration. And, you know, you may come to us with, something you're not happy about, that's fine. We could go to you about something that maybe we are concerned about, and we know that we're both working for the common good of the company, for our members, for our customers. And I think that's really the cultural aspect of it is really the important part, that we're both committed to, you know, moving forward.
Absolutely. I mean, the communication is the key, right? If you don't have that from an organizational perspective, it's fraught with, well, I've implemented this, we didn't know about it. So what do you mean we're being audited in this space, or that we've got this control? The cross communication is so, so important. And really one of Stephanie's strengths is we've documented it, right? It's out there. We obviously have many, many discussions, and we're translating what it means for the organization too, because it is definitely a technology approach, but it still has to be translated for a business process, for a business context. And so I think, Stephanie, that's really where we apply, your translation skills, as it were, to make that happen. Is that a fair statement?
I think so. I think being able to take all those frameworks and sift through them to really get to the bottom of what is this really asking, and being able to map that with the foundation of the CIS controls is really critical. And working with the various teams, so working very closely with IT through implementations when we're implementing and rolling out programs, what do those controls actually look like for that product or service? And sometimes it can be challenging because it's all left up to interpretation at the end of the day. And you really kind of have to almost sell the risk that's associated with not aligning to it. And sometimes that's a hard concept for people to wrap their head around, because there's not necessarily a dollar amount until something actually happens. Then that's where you see it. Until then, it's this arbitrary number that's just floating in the air based on fines or the loss of business, the loss of reputation. Well, what does that really look like at the end of the day? So being able to kind of take this all together, all the frameworks together, and really just create the underlying controls with the CIS controls as the foundation, I think was very critical to being successful. A lot of our team actually goes in and is very hands-on in the audit realm. So they go into the systems themselves to validate and verify the information that we're being provided. And that's just as spot checking, just to make sure everything's working as intended, right? And we're achieving the goals with the risk in mind for those specific controls.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, it's such a good point that we go down that path, because there's another element to it as well, is privacy regulation is also requiring us to be aware. And you know, Tony, we've talked about the different privacy regulations, and that they've really institutionalized security control, data management, and really brought that to fruition where we'd not seen it so much before. But now, you know, May 25th, 2018, I'm never going to forget that date, Stephanie, when GDPR comes into play, it fundamentally changes our idea, as it were. And then that leads to, you know, innovation such as the community defense model. Now we've got collaboration. Now everybody's talking about similar things. So, Tony, does that resonate with you, and that these elements, these new paradigms of privacy and security help us innovate and provide new product and capability?
Well, your point, Sean, is well taken, which is privacy sort of gets the attention of policymakers and business leaders in a way that sort of security for its own sake never really did. And that's probably the right answer, by the way, speaking as an old security wonk, right? That is, you have to be concerned about the mission impact, the business impact, right? The potential for fines, the potential for lost information. So it takes us closer to the consequence part of the classic risk equation. And at the end of the day, a business really cares about consequence. And, you know, it is, Stephanie said, it's very hard to get a handle on things like expected losses. And, you know, there's a whole community, Sean, you're my quantibee friend, you know, looking at the quantification of risk. And there's lots of brilliant people who've thought about this for decades. But at the end of the day, right, this is about business decision making and helping people make rational, reasonable choices, not about some mythical state of security that we don't know how to define. That's not helpful, because every dollar spent competes for attention and for you know, management support. And so we have to frame it that way. So I think you're exactly right. It forces us to think about the consequence part of the problem, but also recognize, right, and by the way, no CIS product, there is no one size fits all. So that nuanced discussion that Stephanie talked about, right, what really matters? You know, the goal was to get everyone to this mythical 80-20 baseline, and then to really focus in on, but what about us in this situation, in these times, with these partners, right, withholding this information? if you could pick where you want to spend human being time, that's worth human beings, right? Examining that. The stuff about configuration, Sean, you talked about automation, right? Most of the hygiene stuff, frankly, is within reach of automation. You know, scanning reports. Hey, you want to know how my desktops are configured and what the exceptions are, the authorized exception, blah, blah, blah. Boom, technology should be able to tell us. Those risk decisions, though, are really important because they're about high risk, high dollar choices that executives make. And that's where you need to have some rationale to negotiate. So you talked about the community defense model. Again, I think we're the only ones that I know of in the industry that says we don't just recommend a list of things because a bunch of people argued till they got tired of looking at each other and wrote it down. We have looked at the most important categories of attacks, not as defined by us, but as evidenced in data through friends like the Verizon data breach folks and CrowdStrike and Palo Alto, et cetera. And we have translated them into using the MITRE ATT&CK framework, right? Here's the pattern of activity that allows that to happen. And for every safeguard, every recommendation we make, here's the value it provides at this stage of this pattern. And to me, that's always been a first step to building a rationale for tailoring, for tuning, for looking at trade-offs. So this compensating control, right? You say, you know what, I know you guys recommend this, but boy, that would be really expensive and clunky and really turn off some of my customer base. Why do you recommend that? Well, here's under the hood, technically, here's why. Are there other ways to achieve that impact on the attacker's tradecraft? Well, yes, there could be, right? And so you want to be able to intelligently do that in a way that's not dependent upon any one human being, but based on sort of a model. Our goal is always things like terms they use in public health, evidence-based practices, right? Data-driven decision-making. You know, I have a dream someday in this industry, we'll make decisions based upon data. And we're, again, that's what's been driving the development of things like CDM, so that folks that like Stephanie and Sean that you deal with and Angela, right? You've got various technology implementation choices, which have different policy implications, which have to be explained to the leadership and to the board of directors in a business context. And so putting all that together, from a sort of core technology recommendations, but being able to intelligently support all that is really, I think, at the heart of what we're trying to do here at an abstract level. So Sean, you're right. And again, we're, it may not be obvious to the public, but the sort of thinking under the hood to bring rationality, evidence, repeatability, not so dependent upon five individual personalities in the room, is really underlies all the things that we do around best practice development. And we look at, right, you've worked with many of the folks on the best practice side. People used to ask me, again, when I was a three-person nonprofit company, what's the strategic plan for the controls? I would say, I don't know, what are your problems in your day? That's my strategic plan, right, is to solve those problems. So the feedback from both our operational, nationwide ISAC mission, but also our work as an IT company with a very demanding board, right, with a good but not unlimited budget to make all this happen. The feedback from all that helps drive the creation of best practices. Because at the end of the day, if you're recommending things that can't be done, won't be done, are too clunky, too cumbersome, or anti-business, they're never going to happen. They're just carvings on stone tablets, and we're not going to get the kind of impact or change that we want. So I can't wait for more feedback, Stephanie, from you and Angelo and Sean to say, how about for version 9 of the controls? You think about these problems that we have today. And that, again, we would welcome that or see that as just part of what CIS does.
Absolutely. And I really wanted to finish there because, Tony, I think it's one thing for the community, the volunteerism that we see, how it affects what we produce, but also what we implement. And that's all, again, that's testament to the hard work, the expertise, from many, many different individuals that allow us to build and provide capability. And then for the team here to execute on that is that. So there's a lot of thanks to go around. And it's an ecosystem, Tony, that we've built that is, I think, one of the most successful, at least most implementable capabilities I've ever seen.
I'd also say, again, I think the ideas, you know, and Sean, you've done a good job of sort of codifying lessons learned, right, from your work in conjunction with Stephanie and with Angelo to help us create content. So again, this is a cycle of activity here that says we live this, right? We're drinking this, that the tasty champagne, but it also allows us to create content. I've told many people, Sean, so maybe I owe you a dollar for this one. If you want to see the work of a CISO, try to piece together the various podcast episodes that Sean has presented and other writings and blog entries and so forth, kind of a day in the life or how to build the roadmap for security improvement in a security company. I think you will find this, you've created a tutorial and a way to help people follow your thought process, right? It will be different for other people's situations and budgets and leadership, but the thought process of the trade-offs that you make, how do I adapt, you know, how do I build the machinery, right? The policies, the structure that Stephanie's responsible for in conjunction with the technology that Angelo builds for us. I think we should just bundle that one up, and I can't come up with a good term like fog of war for you, Sean, but I owe you a buck on this one anyway.
Fog of insanity, maybe.
Well of insanity, perhaps. Yes, I don't know. Sure.
Wonderful. Well, Angelo, Stephanie, again, thank you for being on the podcast, but also thank you for obviously the partnerships and what we've built is a testament to the work, your expertise, and your commitment as well. So I really appreciate it. And I send that appreciation to our audience. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure to join us every Wednesday for episodes like this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.